You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, November 3rd, 2016.
Over the years, I ran out of Bloomington-themed gifts to give people. You know, there's only so many pieces of limestone cut in the shape of bees that you can give people.
Mark Cheetah talks about how he came to make wooden jigsaw puzzles. That's later in the show in today's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks if Bloomington is an affordable place to live. But first, these local headlines.
City Council members approved the creation of a new parking commission in their meeting last night. Council member Steve Volan, who proposed the legislation, said currently there are 8 departments within the city that are involved in parking management. Volan said the commission's purpose will be to develop a comprehensive parking policy.
Because we've never had such a policy, we've made ad hoc decisions on parking that have sometimes conflicted with each other.
Volan, who represents an area that includes much of downtown Bloomington, said his district is more heavily impacted by parking issues than other districts.
Meanwhile, parking is the existential issue of District 6. It's a bigger deal for my constituents than noise. It's bigger than trash. It's bigger even than the most recent intractable social issue of vagrancy downtown. All of 7 and parts of 2 more of 11 parking zones in the city are in District 6.
Volan said the new commission would review the performance of parking facilities, make regular recommendations on prices, hours, and location of spaces, and oversee neighborhood parking zones. Volan emphasized the commission would also provide an annual report, saying there is a significant amount of parking data available that isn't being compiled on an annual basis. Volan noted that some people have asked why this work isn't done by the city's traffic commission.
The simplest reason is it would easily double their workload. But a more important reason is that traffic's reason for existence is to consider how vehicles move. The storage of vehicles is a very different matter. It creates very different issues. And it's at least as important as the movement of vehicles. Vehicle storage, for example, generates revenue, something traffic was not designed to consider. There's dispute about which types of users should be using which type of parking, an economic and sustainable development issue that traffic was not engineered to tackle. Nor is traffic designed to consider, for example, the bureaucratic problems of managing permits, tickets, or appeals.
Traffic Commission member Ryan Cobine, who is also a county council member, offered his support of the proposed parking commission.
The most striking thing to me about Mr. Volan's proposal for the creation of a parking commission is that it identifies a clear lack and offers a very straightforward remedy. Parking occupies, as I'm sure you all know, an outsized portion of the collective consciousness within the city and certainly beyond it as well. Yet, for all the thought and talk about parking in Bloomington, it is an aspect of our civic life that lacks any formal forum with which to express opinions, raise questions, or offer improvements in a holistic way.
City Council member Allison Chopra questioned whether the commission would have the authority to make changes to parking fees and hours, for example, on its own. Volan said the commission's task is to make recommendations and confirmed the city council retains the authority to approve changes. Indiana University student and longtime Bloomington resident Caleb Crane expressed concern about whether the commission would consider how parking issues affect people with disabilities.
I'm a big proponent of this, but I would just encourage the council to table this legislation until further information on inclusion of disability rights and concerns is coming to the Parking Commission, because it always seems as people with disabilities are an afterthought with everything in the government. And through 24 years of life, we have always had issues of people without handicap placards parking in spaces, making life more strenuous and difficult on us.
Volin said reviewing issues such as the one Crane presented was part of the purpose of the commission. Volin described the commissioner's makeup.
Because parking is an economic development issue, the commission would have three representatives from organizations, two merchants with addresses in the meter zone, and a representative from a not-for-profit organization that owns or leases space in the meter zone. Because parking generates a great deal of revenue, there would be four citizens, at least one of whom would have to be a resident of the meter zone, and another one of the four a resident of either the meter zone or of one of the neighborhood parking zones around the city. The other two could live anywhere within the city limits. And because parking generates bureaucratic concerns, there would also be a council member and a member of the staff of the Planning and Transportation Department.
Council members voiced their support for the new parking commission, with the exception of council member Tim Mayer, who said he favored combining the traffic and parking commissions. Mayer abstained during the vote.
Bloomington residents interested in buying solar panels may soon be able to save money by purchasing them through the city government. The City of Bloomington Sustainability Coordinator Jackie Bauer says officials are looking into how residents might be able to join the city's bulk purchase of solar panels.
The city is investing in solar for City Hall and police headquarters. So those are going to be big purchases of solar panels, which means that the price is going to be lower than your average resident can actually get. So this will allow residents to get somewhere close to the same price that we're getting for our big commercial, you know, commercial system purchases.
The city is calling the bulk purchase program Solarizing Bloomington. Bauer says they are still waiting on bids from solar power installers. Right now, she says it's not clear what prices will be or how many households will be allowed to participate.
Effectively, we'll negotiate with the installer on how many they think they can accommodate. And it may be that, you know, we'll cap it at, say, 50 households or something like that. But if they're able to accommodate more than that, then we will likely open it up so we can go a little bit higher.
Bauer says the city will also work with the Solar Indiana Renewable Energy Network, or SIREN, to assess whether houses have a barrier to installing solar power. Sometimes the placement of trees or the age of a roof can make it more difficult to power a home with solar panels. If all goes as planned, Bauer says the program could be officially launched next month. The city could make its purchases as soon as the spring of 2018, and the solar panels will be installed during the following year. Those interested in learning more can contact Bauer by sending an email to sustain@bloomington.in.gov.
The Department of Natural Resources Division of State Parks recently announced that work will begin this fall at Spring Mill State Park to restore a cabin linked to the Red Cross and its founder, Clara Barton. The cabin was moved from its original spot to a place near the Pine Hill Shelter House at Spring Mill Park in 2010. Now the house will be restored with the help of a $30,000 donation from the Hoosier Uplands Economic Development Corporation. The cabin was originally part of a 782-acre farm south of Bedford. The farm was given to Barton in 1893 by Dr. and Mrs. Joseph Gardner of Bedford, who were friends of the famous caregiver and charter members of the Red Cross. After the estimated completion of the structure in late May 2017, Spring Mill State Park hopes to make the structure available to rent for reunions, small company picnics, weddings, and similar events.
Efforts continue to protect migratory species of endangered bats from death and injury due to energy-providing wind farms in Indiana. That's according to a story in the Herald Bulletin in Madison County. An estimated 600,000 to 900,000 bats are killed in the United States each year by wind turbines. Through collisions with blades or internal injuries sustained when the animals pass through the low-pressure zone created in a spinning turbine's wake. Turbine companies can now seek incidental take permits created to allow a small number of animal deaths, yet still allow wind farms to operate economically. In exchange, companies must take steps to avoid more widespread deaths, like shutting down the turbines between sunset and sunrise, or turning them perpendicular to the wind during low wind periods. Additional plans to curb bat deaths include providing upkeep of nesting grounds. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Van De Wiel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Arts advocate Mark Cheetah makes handcrafted wooden jigsaw puzzles featuring photographic images and artwork specific to Bloomington and South Central Indiana. His puzzles have become so popular, he's now scaling back his job as a theater company administrator to produce them on a full-time basis. You can view his work at presspuzzles.com, and they'll be available in selected shops and locations soon. Making fine quality jigsaw puzzles is no easy task, and surprisingly, actual jigsaws are not used in the process. Mark joins Michael Glab on this week's Big Talk to chat about how to make puzzles and his love for them.
Hi, this is Big Talk. This is Michael Glab. My guest today, Mark Cheetah. You have basically held every job there is to hold in this city. Isn't that true?
Well, I've been pretty active in the arts community for about the last 16, 17 years or so. I came from Northwest Indiana, right outside of Gary. I moved to Bloomington, and it was a pretty life-changing experience. And, you know, over the years in Bloomington, I went from being just a passive participant to eventually managing Bloomington bands, working as an independent promoter, and then that just kind of spitballed into a full career in the arts over time.
You've booked for the Waldron. You were a concert photographer.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned being a band manager, an event promoter. You were a nightclub manager. You've been a theater with two different theater companies, at least. There may be more, knowing
right.
you.
Yeah.
Managing director, production manager.
Yep.
In fact, one of those you have just walked away from. Happily, unhappily.
I wouldn't say walked away from. I've worked with Cardinal Stage Company almost since their beginning. I started out as a volunteer, and over time became managing director of that company. And over the past year, I transitioned into production manager. That really was a way for me to transition out of the company on a full-time basis to pursue my own business, which is a hand-cut wooden jigsaw puzzle company.
You sort of formalized the whole operation in about 2013.
Correct. It's an idea that had been fermenting for easily 6 or 7 years. I've lived in Bloomington off and on for many years,
right.
And I feel very passionate about the community. Over the years, I ran out of Bloomington-themed gifts to give people. You know, there's only so many pieces of limestone cut in the shape of bees that you can give people. And so I, for several years, was trying to, you know, figure out if there was a way that I could help create a mid-price Bloomington-themed item. And I've always liked jigsaw puzzles, and eventually those two ideas came together.
Now, when you say you spent about 6 or 7 years developing this idea,
mm-hmm.
does that mean you did a little hands-on playing with materials to see if you could actually do it?
Yeah, there. Towards the end, I did. There was a lot of research involved. You know, there was about a decade where I was working in the nightclub world. And so over those years, my biological clock got set to going to bed at 7 or 8 in the morning.
Mm.
And so I transitioned out of running nightclubs in late 06. There was a good 4-year run where I lived and worked on 4th Street between College and Walnut. And there's not a whole lot to do at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning except to get into trouble. I had avoided becoming an alcoholic when I ran clubs. I didn't want to become one afterwards just because I was bored in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So what I ended up doing was every single day I would go down to the Monroe County Public Library. I would get 2 or 3 movies, and then I would go home and had movies on in the background, and I worked on putting together store-bought jigsaw puzzles. My very next job was working as the performance director and the technical director of the John Waldron Art Center. Quite often I would be asked to work the gift shop during the holiday season. And since every year I would work this, I'd be like, oh great, I can get all my Christmas shopping done while I'm working this job. But what I came to find is that most of the items in the shop were kind of $10 and below trinkets.
Yeah.
Or $300 and above fine pieces of art. All of it was beautiful work, but very little of it spoke of Bloomington proper. So those were kind of the two ideas that were floating independently that eventually became press puzzles. And I'm making the leap into, you know, giving it a solid 14 or 6 months of my full-time attention and see where it'll take me.
And that's happening right now. If I'm not mistaken, you have just gone full-time within the last few days.
Yeah, I've been making plans, over the last year to really gear this up into a full-time business and see if it's something that is self-sustainable or if it's something that should remain a hobby. And either one of those things is fine with me. I just want to try it out and see.
Does it cost a lot of money to set up shop for a jigsaw puzzle making business?
I would do the occasional web search on how do you make a jigsaw puzzle. And it would usually take me to some very expensive piece of equipment, typically a press. These would run $4,000 or $5,000 or so, and that wasn't money I could track down. The next manufacturing I came across was a laser cutter, and laser cutters once again ranged from $3,000 to $20,000. And eventually I came across a YouTube video of a guy using something called a scroll saw to make a jigsaw puzzle.
A scroll saw?
Yeah. Okay. And it was a full 8-minute tutorial of how to adhere the picture onto the wood, what type of wood to be using, to the cutting process, and sanding process at the end of it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to look into a scroll saw. Turns out you can get a scroll saw new for $70. They're not good, but it lasted me a full year of pretty heavy cutting.
So that was your first investment?
That was my first investment. I've gone through 3 scroll saws now. My jigsaw puzzles are primarily Bloomington themed. So I really started out making jigsaw puzzles that focus on arts and culture of the Bloomington community. What I mean by that, I guess, then, is I would look for very iconic things in the community that appeal to me and take photos of them and turn those into the pictures on the puzzles.
You would take the photo.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I do the majority of the photography. But what I found out quickly is that kids love jigsaw puzzles, but they could probably care less about a jigsaw puzzle of the courthouse on the square.
Right.
And so that led me to then begin searching out some Bloomington artists who do artwork of Bloomington. Joe Lee is a fabulous graphic artist in town. Mike Cagle has a really great illustration of the courthouse, the fish on the square, all the buildings around it. And Martina Sellerin is another wonderful artist. She does these amazing 3-dimensional fiber weavings. Mm-hmm. And so I approached her if she would just let me use some of the pictures of her artwork to make some of my puzzles.
Thanks for joining us on Big Talk.
Thank you.
You can hear that episode of Big Talk along with the rest of Michael Glab's interviews online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at inscap.org.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, with IU growing every year, one wonders, is Bloomington an affordable place to live? Longtime residents have certainly seen an increase in apartment complex construction over the last 10 years, and many people are curious as to how these new developments affect local rent prices. We have gone out into the streets and asked your friends and neighbors whether they think Bloomington is still an affordable town to live in.
I've lived here for a long time, and I've certainly seen the cost of living go up quite a bit in the time I've lived here. I'm in a position where I'm not struggling myself, but I do know a lot of people that are, and it feels like just subjectively that it has changed and that it is quite a bit more expensive to live here and manage your life.
I think it's fairly affordable for me, at least. I'm a grad student, and with the stipend they give me, I'm able to afford a single bedroom apartment, so at least for me it's affordable living on a grad student stipend salary, so I feel fine. I can afford living here.
Well, I don't know. Everything seems to be reasonably priced. Housing's a little high, but other than that, I don't. It's much cheaper than larger cities.
All right. I would say Bloomington's not the most affordable due to the fact that Indiana University kind of gentrifies the society here and causes the rent and things, at least at the places where you'd really would ideally like to stay. To be pretty high. So ultimately, the cost of living in Bloomington is a lot higher than what you would think for southern Indiana.
Bloomington is, I know, one of the more expensive places to live in Indiana, but it can be affordable depending on what you do.
No, it's not. Guy making a minimum wage can't afford an apartment. My son is borderline homeless, can't afford a place. You can only have two people in a room, in a building, you know, unrelated. So, and there aren't any low-income houses around. There's a waiting list to get into them, and no one's planning on building anymore. So that's my opinion. Not affordable. And the college atmosphere raises the price. It's nothing against the college kids. I love them. But it's not meant to be affordable.
I think the rent's expensive here because of the college students, but other than that, I think it's pretty...
It's a reasonable place to live, especially if you know getting subsidized by your parents. But for a lot of people, I don't think Bloomington has the types of jobs necessary to pay for a lot of the housing here. So if you're not a student, it's more difficult.
Yes, I do. I used to live in Indianapolis, and other than the gas being more expensive here, I don't have any problems with it.
Compared to other places, I've lived in larger cities, so yes, it's very pretty good compared to larger cities. Not as good as smaller towns, which are obviously going to be cheaper.
Okay, well, compared to where I'm from, which is Boulder, Colorado, it's extremely affordable because usually a one-bedroom apartment is like $1,100, and here it's $600 that I'm paying, so yeah, I don't know. To me.
I've lived in Bloomington for about 40 years, and it has changed wildly in those 40 years from an affordability standpoint. You know, food, of course, that's going to be largely the same everywhere, but in terms of lodging, yeah, the price of lodging has gotten astronomically higher. And income's not so much. I mean, folks here in Bloomington, when I look around the country at other jobs, let's say doing what I'm doing, typically they pay quite a bit more, maybe about 15-20% more. So all that being said, though, it is a, as you know, a stunning place to live in a wonderful town and rare. And so I guess that's what we're paying for.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street is produced by Kelly Worley. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ryan Stacey.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.